The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back, Red Sox Nation. Spring training is underway. Four games in, the Red Sox stand 2-2 with some very interesting insights so far. Obviously, way too early to make a lot of value judgments on these guys, but we in baseball love knee-jerk reactions, and we also love a lot of the information that comes out of the clubhouses, a lot of the information that comes out of sometimes the players' or the coaches' mouths, to maybe guide us into seeing what the season might hold in store. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Doug Aitchison and Jeremy Schilling, and we are the Bastards of Boston. So thank you for joining me tonight, fellas. We have some interesting things to talk about. As I said, you know, it's early, of course. The knee-jerk reaction right now is Ranger Suarez is a bum, and Connelly Early is an early Cy Young candidate, you know, just going off of first performances. But you know, it's obviously only four games deep, but some things are very interesting, such as, of course, the timeshare, right? That's going to be going on. Obviously, spring training is a good way to look at a lot of youth. It's also a good way to exercise guys at positions, try to get a feel for the lineup. And we're already sort of getting a taste for what the major league lineup might look like. Roman Anthony batting leadoff, Trevor Story batting second, which I'm not a huge fan of. Duran behind him. I'd probably jumble that around a little bit in my perfect world, but what are some of your knee-jerk reactions right now? Some of your first thoughts? We can start with Doug, go to Jeremy, back around to myself.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's early and I'm not a big, everything in spring training is a huge deal guy, but I agree with the lineup. I think the lineup, I don't think that's the order that we should, that is going to be the starting day order. I agree with you. I don't like Story in that. I don't think anyone does. But, you know, I think the big really glaring thing here is Meyer. And I know Jeremy's got something to say about it. So we'll go to that.
So I have many knee-jerk reactions. One is I'm not going to respond to tweets and nonsensical commentary about one start. Oftentimes these guys work on one pitch, you know, where they come in and they're like, well, we're just going to go fastball change today. And I didn't see Suarez's start today. Time got away from me. I tried to, and the next thing I know it was 2:00 and he was already out of the game. But I'm not going to do it. Suarez is going to be in the top of the rotation. Conley's going to be in the bottom of the rotation or in the bullpen or potentially in Worcester. And all those things are in play. His last two starts are the ones that are going to matter as he gets stretched out. How is he continuing to get people out second, maybe even a third time through the rotation? I hate Story hitting second. And I'm okay with a non-traditional leadoff hitter. And what I mean by that is in my youth, the leadoff hitter was a guy that could run, could get on base. And now you're seeing more like the Schwarber and Philly Anthony in Boston, where they don't necessarily run well. Anthony's not necessarily slow-footed, but he's not there to steal second base. He's there to get on base. And when you have that type of guy leading off, your second hitter needs to be putting the ball in play. That is one thing Story does not do at a high level, okay? He likes to strike out. No, he doesn't like to strike out, but he does a lot. The problem is, I don't know who would be best to hit second. It might be Anthony, and you can't hit him second and hit leadoff. So is it Duran? Definitely not against lefties. Is it Willier? Definitely not against lefties. So the second spot in the lineup is a problem right now. And if Story's your best solution, that goes to show you the roster imbalance that I've complained about all offseason. All right. What was my other takeaway? My other takeaway, I'm going to save it after Nick's opening thought, is I listened today to Cora speaking about a couple players, and I have a thought once I share that with everyone about how I feel about Mayer coming to camp, but I'll turn it over to you, Nick.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. And you mentioned Duran and you mentioned the whole lefty debacle. And I wrote down a couple of notes just for myself on this tonight, which, you know, it's so interesting, right? How so many Red Sox fans, myself included, we're just straight up losing bets, because last year, all year long, pretty much around the deadline to now, we were saying if opening day comes around or even spring training comes around and Willier Abreu and Jaron Duran are still on the team, that would be a very big surprise. And yet both of them are here somehow. You know, they say that we have these four elite outfield talents, right? In Duran, Abreu, Rafaela, and Anthony. And I don't completely disagree with that. But to me, an elite talent doesn't raise question marks versus left-handed pitching, or versus right-handed pitching, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, we have this very strange carousel right now that is only compounded by the existence of Masataka Yoshida, who Alex Cora about a week ago called the best hitter on the team, or one of the best hitters on the team. And of course, you got to stand by your guys, but it's just a ridiculous statement. You know, this is a guy with a 109 OPS plus in 2023, ticked up to a 116 in 24. And granted, last year, despite being cut short and despite not being the total season that he certainly wanted, he did perform in September and the playoffs. But it comes with a big caveat. You know, this is a guy who's going into his age 31 season, yet to fill that next step, you know, yet to fill that DH role perfectly. He is a fine hitter, but so far he has a 650 OPS career versus lefties in America. And that is an issue, especially when our elite outfielders are struggling versus the same handedness. You have Abreu, you have Duran, both of whom have serious question marks. You know, thank God for Rafaela and Roman right now. Rafaela last year had a 679 OPS versus lefties. That was up from the previous year by quite a bit. Roman, of course, had a 770 OPS versus lefties and 854 in the minors. So there's no real question marks there. But, you know, Duran has a 620 career OPS versus lefties, 600 last year. That is a guy that you want to platoon. Willier Abreu, a 589 career, thankfully ticked up to a 676 last year. So maybe he can be your everyday guy, but that's yet to be proven. And when you have guys like Rob Refsnyder leaving the team in free agency, a guy like Roman Gonzalez getting injured, your lefty killers, your go-to platoon options are suddenly gone. And what do you do? I mean, technically, Yoshida's a little bit better than Duran versus lefties, but he's also significantly better versus righties than lefties. So you don't want a guy, you know, being your platoon guy just because he's a little bit less bad. You want a guy who's good, obviously. So it's very odd. There's only three outfield positions. There's only one DH. Having five guys rotate through it is, I'm afraid, is only going to serve to limit the plate appearances for the guys who actually deserve them. And that's not really a bet I want to take on a guy like Masataka Yoshida personally. Nothing against the guy. Hopefully he has a big year. But someone has to go still. I've been saying it for a year. We've all been saying it for a year. And as much as I love all these guys in a vacuum, the roster construction is leading to a lot of questions.
Yeah, I agree. And I think at first, too, like a lot of the thought was, oh, what are they going to do with the outfield? What's the defense going to look like? And I kind of wasn't really thinking of, well, what's the order 1 through 9? And now that I'm seeing it, it's like they're kind of just throwing guys. It really looks like they just threw every name at the wall in whatever order they were in, they hit. And, you know, Jeremy's right. You know, 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been, you know, Duran would have let off. You know, Roman would hit third. And it's just that would just be set. And, you know, it's at this point in pro sports, you know, it's the manager's job or the coach's job to put players in the position to succeed. You know, they have the talent. Everyone can play, you know, and everyone blames a player sometimes when they do bad. But sometimes it's they're not getting put in the right position to succeed. And, you know, sometimes that's on the coach. Sometimes it's on the player. But I think it's a lot. That's a lot. When I look at this lineup, I think of that a lot right now. Like, they're not putting Christian Campbell in a place to succeed right now. And, you know, if you pay a guy that much, you know, I can deal with him being in Worcester for a year, but if you're not getting him up there by that second year, then maybe it's not on him always. Maybe it's on you to actually develop a guy or find a spot for him to actually be on the team if you thought he was belong there. But it's like, you know, Jeremy, it's like if we're coaching varsity sports and you bring a freshman up on varsity, he should be starting by his junior year, or you failed him. It's kind of how I.
Well, they've failed him. And you want to talk about roster construction issues. They have a guy that they've extended in Campbell that is mostly playing in the outfield, where we already have a surplus of big league talent. So they're developing him to be what? The fifth or sixth outfield in case there's multiple injuries. We could do a whole 1 hour special on how bad they have done Campbell in, starting with the fact that the only reason why he made the club to start the year over guys like Anthony and Meyer are because he agreed to the extension, which is just not the way to run a team. And I'm going to get to my Meyer comments in a minute, because they're doing something now that I actually tend to agree with, but I also worry that it's motivated by money, because at the end of the day, our trying to think of a clean adjective here. I'll go with cheap owner is giving directives down through the front office that make them make decisions that are not entirely based on what's best for the big league product. And you get issues with like Campbell playing exclusively in the outfield on an extension with no spot for him. You have things like Yoshida still on this roster, despite the fact that he hasn't produced at all. And they're so quick to say, well, now he's finally healthy. And by the way, I hope they're right, because he is a high contact guy. He shouldn't strike out if he's right. He should be using all corners of the field to you know, you're not going to hit for power. So hopefully some doubles, although he runs like a robot. And I could go on and on. Cassis is still with the big league club. There's no spot for him. Thank God, by the way. They go and trade for Durbin, who we don't even know if he's a second baseman or a third baseman. It looks like they expect him to play third. You know, he had a great rookie year, or a pretty good rookie year, finished third in the race. But are we convinced that he's a big league player ready to play every day in the AL East? I'm not. And so, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, so I'll just mention it quickly. It just goes to show you that the game plan that's so important to Breslow, because we're not going to make deals at the deadline because it's not efficient. Well, you had a whole offseason to be efficient, and you were inefficient. You made mistake after mistake as you were standing there as all the big guys came off the board because you didn't properly evaluate them, or you didn't get the green light from old man John. So, I mean, look, I could continue to go on. Contreras doesn't look like he's in great shape, by the way. I did see a few innings I saw on at bat today. He doesn't look like he's in great shape. Like I'm going to get to Meyer in a second. I don't know that we have an answer right now at second base. And I don't know whoever gets the job at second base is going to be there for a stretch run. We have health issues at second. We have health issues at short. We have a 35-year-old Contreras who doesn't look like he's in shape, backed up by a guy who's going to be playing in Worcester, hopefully Cassis, who is coming off a major injury and has injury history all over his still relatively young career. I mean, Abreu spent multiple trips to the IL last year. I mean, there's issues all over the place. So the only thing that I have some level of confidence in is the depth of the starting rotation.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair, you know. When it comes to Yoshida, by the way, I was mistaken. I think I said that he was going into his age 31 season. He's coming out of his age 31 season. He's actually turning 33 in July. So if this guy is going to take the next step, maybe on that Barry Bonds track where you peak in your late 30s, you know, I don't know. We need something more than what we've gotten from him. And I don't have the confidence in a 33-year-old man to be able to pull that out necessarily. Now, he is going to the World Baseball Classic. He is going to be playing, I believe, left field for Japan. So maybe this can serve as some exhibition for his talents. Maybe if he has a lightning type of World Baseball Classic, maybe, just maybe, increase that value. And who knows, maybe someone would be willing to eat $2 million of his contract to take him on. But it's just ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous.
I'll tell you this, if I'm game planning that WBC against that team, it's pepper that ball to left field. I don't care if it's a team fly ball, baby.
Yeah. You know, and then get ready at second base when he's up the bat.
Yeah. Turn a double into
second base and get in your stance.
But it's ridiculous, you know, and it was a bad signing. And sometimes you just have to accept the fact that you made a bad signing. Are you going to continue to play a guy that's costing you money and costing you wins? You sort of saw with how the Angels treated Anthony Rendon at the end of it all, how at a certain point, you know, as much as it hurts to pay a guy X amount of millions of dollars to not play for you, it hurts worse to pay a guy that much money to lose games for you instead. And Masataka Yoshida hasn't necessarily been that bad. He does have some positive value, but it's not what you expect from a DH, especially for a team like the Red Sox, which has had a lot of success at that position historically, from Big Poppy to JD Martinez to even Kyle Schwarber potentially, which was suddenly, you know, that possibility vanished, you know, like a magician's trick. And Masataka Yoshida appeared, and it's just, it's not good. It's not well done. And it's, I'm glad that you trend. Guys, yeah, you know, I'm glad. It's like sawing a woman in half, but there's no magic. It's just gruesome. You know what I mean?
The issue with Yoshida, and I've said this all offseason, so I won't go on and on, is he's not, to use just a different phrase, Nick, because I don't agree with he's losing games. They're not putting him in a position to lose game. He's not botching fly balls because he's not playing in the outfield. But what he does is he locks up the roster, and he creates a team that's not going to hit the ball out of the ballpark, which is fine. We can all accept that. But then you have to create pressure on the opposing defense. You have to go first to third. You have to score on a single if you're on second base. You have to do the little things that's going to generate crooked innings. And then you have a guy who runs like he's carrying a mini fridge on his back. And he can't play anywhere in the field, and he's going to prevent somebody from being on the roster that is capable of playing multiple positions and providing the exact opposite, in that that player would provide roster flexibility, like a guy like Eaton, who can play you some right field. He's shown he can play third. He can play second. He can pinch run. He's an explosive base runner. I don't know what he's going to be at the big league level on offense, but what he provides is a significant amount of roster flexibility. And then instead we're going to keep Yoshida, who's going to DH against righties. And make no mistake about it. Okay. Anybody who doubts this is out of their mind. He's only there because he's making $18 million a year. And John Henry's like, I'm not eating that money until the final year. So he's got to hit. Cora's propping him up, saying he can be the best hitter. He knows that comment's going to get to Yoshida. And I think you're right. I think both the player need to go to the WBC and hit, and the team wants him to, either so that he comes back with the confidence to hit in the big league, or build some moderate level of interest to try to move him. And so John Henry, you know, doesn't have to just DFA him. But that the Yoshida thing's a real problem.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, he's not been bad enough to cost us games. He is worth positive war. But, you know, the problem is when you're putting in a guy, a DH with 1.4 war in a season, you know, you want a guy with double that, ideally, if you're the Boston Red Sox, especially if you're going to be paying a considerable amount of money. You know, imagine if we could free up that $18 million and your DH this year was Jaron Duran and Romy Gonzalez platooning. I mean, that would not only be good value, potentially better than Yoshida. It would free up, of course, the $18 million to ideally spend elsewhere. And possibly by elsewhere, it's on another yacht for John Henry. But, you know, let's switch, though, to the infield. Because, you know, we've all got a lot to say. Jeremy, I know you've been sitting on a Meyer take. I'll sort of bring in this segue where today we were watching new trade acquisition Caleb Durbin. I've seen a little bit of him play third base now, and I like what I see. He looks pretty healthy out there. I'm excited to see him on the team. He's not the sexy player that maybe a lot of us wanted at third base, but he does look to be a pretty competent guy. But the interesting thing is if he's playing third base, he's kind of stealing Meyer's position. Cora talked a little bit about the flexibility of Durbin probably getting a start at second base later this week. Meyer coming off that surgery, coming back into the roster or the rotation of players potentially on Friday, I think. But the problem is we don't have a set second baseman and a set third baseman. You know, Durbin and Meyer are sort of competing to see who is going to play where, which is a very odd way to set it up. And I'll just pass the torch around.
Yeah. So Cora says today, essentially, he hopes it's going to be Meyer at second base. So he's signaled that. But then he immediately says something to the effect of, but we're not just going to hand it to him. And there was a lot that was said, but the things that I'm focused on were that, you know, somebody asked them, you know, well, is that against, does he need to, like, where does he need to be better? And Cora's response is offensively. He's a plus defender. He's been good on the bases, but he knows that he needs to hit at the big league level. And if you asked him that, he would tell you that, right? And then I don't remember who it was, comes in and says, so that's against lefties, right? And Cora's like, no, it's against lefties and righties, you know? And he just puts him on blast. Like, no, he's not ready to hit at the offensive level. And it's almost as if he was alluding to the fact that maybe he didn't show up in camp in the best shape. Maybe it's the way he's preparing on a day-to-day basis. Is he, you know, in the clubhouse early? Is he doing his treatment? Is he doing his conditioning? And obviously Cora didn't get into that. It was just the comments that struck me. And so, and then simultaneously, he's asked about some of the other big league invites that could get that spot if it's not Meyer. And he's talking them up like they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? You say that it should be Meyer's job and then you roast him. Essentially, as much as you can in modern times, rip an athlete in the media, he ripped him. Go listen to the comments if you haven't heard it. And then he talks pretty glowingly about the other options. So there's two things that are evidently that are evident to me and clear to me. Number one, he wants Meyer to have the job. And number two, Meyer is not currently doing the things he needs to get the job, right? So he's motivating him through the media because maybe he's worried about the private meetings aren't doing the trick. I heard a rumor that maybe he's pretty heavy into video games. I don't know anything about that. All right. And I I'm a gamer. I don't care. Go play your video games, find your way to, you know, disconnect and find balance and all that. But like, it's one thing is, again, he's a paid professional athlete. Is he eating the right things? Is he in the clubhouse? If he's got a nagging thing, this is an injury prone player. Is he with the therapist? Is he with the PT? Is he in the weight room? Is he doing the things that are going to lead to success? And Cora's comments today had me pretty concerned he's not. So guys, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. If he doesn't hit in the spring, I don't think he's going to get the job. And otherwise, Cora's words were nothing more than a threat to the media that he knows are going to get to Meyer. So I don't know what you guys think about it, but it just adds, this team's not going to be boring, by the way. It adds to the dysfunction. Some of it's not this like dysfunction, like, you know, emotional dysfunction. It's just like the roster's dysfunctional. We already talked about Yoshida. We talked about we didn't get the big names that we wanted. Bregman went to the Cubs and they're standing there like shocked. And then they got to go trade for Durbin because they just have an absolute need. And that was the team that was willing to play ball with them. And then you add in that there's some issue behind the scenes with Meyer that forces Cora to even say these things today. It's bananas. So I don't know if you guys heard those comments or have a position on Meyer, but I have real concerns at second base after what I heard today.
Yeah, no, everything you said spot on. And he, they said he's, is Meyer going to play this weekend?
They say Friday, they said I think.
This weekend or Friday. Okay. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, he obviously wasn't ready, you know, for the start, I guess that's what they were saying. So, you know, we'll see. I think he has to, you know, I think he has to look good right away. You know, he can't, I think, even though I'm not a big, you know, spring training guy, but there's some players that it does matter for. And he has to come out and he has to show that he's ready to do it.
Well, I'll tell you a guy last year that was clearly not ready and they played him anyways. That was Christian Campbell.
Yeah.
So.
And then he started on fire.
That was smoke and mirrors because obviously he wasn't and is not still ready. But
right.
I mean, that, I mean, maybe, and maybe they learned their lesson. And one more thing I forgot, Nick, before I toss it over to you. I don't think for a second that part of the motivation for Cora's comments today was the fact that Meyer has not signed an extension.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not willing to rule that out either. You know, it is odd because this guy has so quickly went from the shortstop of the future to the temporary third baseman while you know, Trevor Story is still here to, well, actually he's going to be our second baseman. And you know, all of those comments about, you know, keeping him at third to keep his arm, you know, good and whatnot for his inevitable move to short. Right now, it looks like the Red Sox organization is thinking Trevor Story, Franklin Arias. That's the, you know, no bridge in between. That's the pipeline. And Marcelo Meyer, if he shows up, he shows up, and good on him. You know, that seems to be, unfortunately, the case of this player who is injury prone, has struggled versus lefties, and apparently has not shown enough versus righties, like you said, Jeremy, to win the starting job. You know, the good news is we do have a lot of infield depth right now, I guess. We signed IKF. We got the guys Monasterio and Siegler in the same trade. We have Sogard. We have Eaton. We have this surprising emergence of Mikey Romero, who's just lighting it up. And he's one of the guys that, you know, you're hearing a lot of coaches within the organization coming out and speaking very positively on. And I agree with you that suddenly you look at the big four and it's looking like a lot of, like you said, smoke and mirrors. I mean, Kyle Teal traded, Roman Anthony, excellent so far in the relatively brief stint that we've seen. And, you know, you can say that one out of four ain't bad, but when you were hoping that this was going to be the cavalry, the youth movement that was going to completely spike the Red Sox back into competition, having so many question marks around a guy like Marcelo Meyer and a guy like Christian Campbell, it is extremely concerning, especially because when I listed all of those infield options, like you alluded to before, Christian Campbell isn't there anymore. They're still talking about potentially working him out on the infield, but he is primarily viewed as an outfielder, meaning he's the sixth or seventh outfield option and the eighth or ninth infield option. And that is very concerning for a guy that you've locked up to money. And I know he's only 23 years old, and I know that there's a lot of space, you know, for him to develop into something better. But when you're paying a guy serious money to have a comment, this is what Cora said: if we get the offense back, we can find at-bats, referring to Christian Campbell. That is, it's an obvious statement, obviously. Yes, if you can hit, we'll find a spot for you. But it doesn't sound like the vote of confidence you're necessarily hoping for. And so the guy doesn't have a clear spot to the big leagues. I mean, there's no chance that you trade a guy because his value is at rock bottom. And so you stash him in AAA, making a lot of money, and suddenly you're starting to, you know, have the name Rosny Castillo bouncing around your head.
I was just thinking that. 100%. That guy made $70 million playing in AAA.
He was chilling.
I got a trivia question for you guys that I think is relevant.
Okay, here we go.
And I think both of you will get this. Do you guys remember where Marcelo Meyer was actually drafted?
Fourth
overall. Yep. Okay. How many years ago was he drafted fourth overall?
5 years ago.
If he's gonna be who the organization thinks he is, this is no doubt the year that he has to do it.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy. Yeah. I heard that earlier today. I was blown away. To me, he's still like, you know, young, but he's 5 years into his professional career as a top pick. You know, he had a huge signing bonus. He made a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. You know, they pushed.
It was a big deal when we drafted him.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not like a big into the draft guy, but I remember when we drafted him, everyone was like, this kid's, mm-hmm. It was a big deal.
You know, I don't know. Like he ends the year with a wrist injury. Where did he rehab? Did he not rehab in Boston? Did he rehab on his own in Arizona or some of these other places that do it? That pisses teams off. Yeah. And then if you do rehab outside of the team and you come back and you're not ready to go, there's going to be an inherent frustration. You know, you're a paid employee of the system and you don't show up ready to work. It's a problem, man. And I don't exactly know. I think there'll be some investigation and journalism. Some of the journalists should look further into this after the comments today. But there's something below the scenes that caused this today. And I don't think it's just that he's not hitting in live BP.
Yeah.
Something's going on. It's a problem.
Yeah. He's definitely disappointed in something in him.
So
yeah.
Seemed like a disappointing.
And I mean, look, at right now, that's the real only, other than who's going to pitch where in the rotation and who's going to make the bullpen with the surplus, who might go get some innings in AAA. That's the only spot that's really in any sort of doubt. Contreras is playing first.
Right.
Story's at short. Durbin's at third. We know it's going to be Wong and Narvaez. And we know we're going to have the four outfielders.
Yep.
So that, besides maybe that last spot on the bench, you know, it's crazy not to have that figured out.
Yeah. It is. It is. And it is concerning. You know, I remember when Meyer was drafted, I think he fell a little bit in the draft, which is absurd to say about a fourth overall pick, of course. Yeah. But I remember it was a direct result of that terrible 2020 season. And everyone said, oh, man, Heim Bloom, you know, it was good fortune, actually, to throw away the lockdown season, the shortened season. You know, we don't get our good 60 games, but now we get this great shortstop of the future. And unfortunately, the great shortstop of the future is losing his future, you know. Of course, we're going to see, as the season develops, exactly what happens. But it's funny because the IKF signing, I thought at the time, was a knee-jerk, almost a little too quick of a signing to say, oh, well, this is our emergency third baseman if we need one. Right. It's sort of a preemptive strike on the lack of the third base trade. And then when we got Durbin, I said, oh, well, I wish we didn't sign IKF then. If we just went out and got Durbin, that was, you know, we got ahead of ourselves and we wasted that money potentially. But now it's looking like, no, IKF is not just insurance at third base. It's possible he was an insurance for Meyer, you know, and that is very, very, I mean, just how the mighty have fallen. Honestly, we need a big year from this kid. Hopefully he can absolutely rock it forward. But Roman Anthony is focused on Roman Anthony right now. Marcelo Meyer has to be focused on Marcelo Meyer. And we need a serious jump from this youth movement that is still sort of surging in Boston. But, you know, it's possible that a guy like this, and it's very odd, especially when you hear that, oh, well, Meyer's name was tossed around in the Ketel Marte trade. Suddenly you start to wonder, well, why didn't we? You know, why didn't we ship him off? I don't know, man. It's going to be one of those things where hindsight is obviously going to give us a lot of answers here. You know, because Marcelo Meyer right now, he could recover. He could go on to be a 30, you know, career war guy, a 50 career war guy, or he could just be one of those trivia facts 10, 20 years from now on, hey, you guys remember that shortstop that didn't pan out?
Definitely. And I think, you know, he's a big part of the success of this team. If he steps in and has a good season, then that, I mean, he fills the second base spot, and I feel like he's kind of perfect for the two spot in the lineup too. Mm-hmm. He kind of fills the spots that we really, really need. He is the answer to it. I'm not saying like he will be, but I'm saying he, you know, like he is, if he it can be good, he is the answer to our big problems, our big spots. So there's a lot riding on it, and I don't know what my percentage would be in faith wise on it right now. Not very high.
Not after today.
No. Yeah.
Cora pumping Yoshida up. I think he could be a great offensive player, one of our best hitters. Oh, by the way, Meyer needs to improve both on against righties.
Yoshida's great. This kid over here sucks.
There's smoke, there's fire, guys.
Yeah.
It's true.
This Meyer kid sucks.
So, you know, I think the last thing.
If you haven't heard it, go listen.
Listening
right now after we end live. Go take the 3 minutes to listen to the comments. Mm-hmm. It's in modern professional sports, this isn't Bill Belichick going after Aaron Glenn or Bill Belichick taking a shot at Tom Brady. It's different. It just sounds different. It's concerning.
Yeah, because Cora was amping up Yoshida, as we discussed. He was amping up Jaren Duran. He said that, and I have the quote here too. I know it's early, but JD seems like a different hitter. You know, so he's amping guys up. That's not, you know, completely averse for him.
Not everyone's Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah. You know, so I think my closing thoughts here, the last thing that I just wanted to throw a little mention to is Conley early and Tolley, right? These two young pitching prospects, part of the Red Sox, I think 6 out of our top 10 right now are pitchers in terms of prospects. Early, I think they said added like 15 pounds in the offseason. His fastball topped off. I think I saw 96.5 when he pitched. Really good looking pitcher. A lot of people saying this dude showed up looking great. Certainly from his debut, his 2 clean innings, I think they were very solid. Tolley, meanwhile, his potential is still being loudly heralded. Everyone is saying the fastball is there. Just hammer out the secondary pitches and you're a rotation lock eventually, potentially next year to step into Sonny Gray's role, assuming there's not a lockout. And interestingly enough, Tolley did add a sinker to his repertoire. So we'll see how that plays out for him. I think he has maybe 4 secondary pitches right now off the top of my head. I know a changeup, curveball, maybe something else. So if even 2 of those become plus pitches, this dude's going to be a stud. I'm so glad that these two are still in the system. And then the last little thing is the ABS system, right? We're starting to see it at the major league level. I found out that managers cannot challenge, only batters, pitchers, and catchers can. And it has to be kind of an instantaneous thing. You can't ask anyone. You can't go to the dugout. And you only have 2. You get more in extras if you used them. And it's somehow like based to the batter's height, but not necessarily the batter's stance. So it is going to be very funny this year to see which batters do the worst. You know, some of these guys, their coaches are like, please don't challenge a pitch. Please, whatever you do, do not use up one of those challenges. I think we're probably going to see more of them from the catchers than anyone else this year.
Yeah,
but, it's interesting. So, yeah, those are just a couple of closing thoughts I want to throw out before we end it. How about you guys?
Shout out USA Hockey.
Yeah, no kidding.
There you go.
That was awesome.
All righty. Thank you guys for joining us. Spring training, lots of distance to go. The World Baseball Classic around the corner, which I'm looking forward to. Of course, a lot of people are. I've been Nick, joined by Doug and Jeremy. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you so much for tuning in, watching, listening, commenting. We do appreciate it, and we'll see you next time. Take care, everybody. Let's go Red Sox.